And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's Thursday, June 5th. 52 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City and 56 degrees in Heber City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Thursday. As we take a look at your forecast, we're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go throughout this afternoon. Temperatures will climb near 70 degrees for a high in Park City. We'll see our high temperatures climbing into the mid-70s there for the Heber Valley. There is a very slight chance of a pop-up shower coming through the area this afternoon, but most of us will stay on the dry side. We're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go into your Friday as well. Temperatures starting off in the low to mid-40s across the region. We'll see highs climbing into the low 70s in Park City with highs in the upper 70s for the Heber Valley. There will be a slightly higher chance of a few isolated showers developing in the afternoon hours in the mountains as we go throughout your Friday afternoon. But again, I wouldn't cancel any of your outdoor plans. As we go into the weekend, high pressure builds in from the west. You know what that means? That means drier conditions, lots of sunshine, and we're going to start a warming trend. High temperatures on your Saturday will climb into the mid to upper 70s after kicking off the day in the 40s in the Park City. We're going to be climbing into the mid 80s for highs in the Heber Valley with lots of sunshine after kicking off the day in the 40s. As we go into your Sunday, look for lots of sunshine. Temperatures starting off in the low 50s in Park City. We'll start off in the mid 40s there in the Heber Valley. High temperatures will climb into the low 80s for you as we go throughout your afternoon hours on your Sunday in Park City with highs in the upper 80s for the Heber Valley. Heading into the beginning of next week, we're going to see lots of sunshine to kick off things with hot temperatures. Will be in the low 80s there in Park City as we kick off your week on Monday. We'll be near 90 in the Heber Valley, so definitely much warmer weather building on into the area. As we go into your Tuesday and Wednesday, we're looking at partly cloudy skies. Temperatures staying on the warm side. High temperatures will be into the low 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs into the upper 80s near 90 in the Heber Valley. So while we will start off with temperatures seasonable for this time of the year, we're going to jump above average for this weekend into next week. That's a look at your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Thanks, Cedric. And on the phone now with an update from Mountain Trails Foundation, we have Rick Fournier on the phone. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Leslie, and good morning, Park City. Shaping up to be a busy one out there this weekend. First off, a couple of closures and trail impacts to be aware of. The Park City Trail Series is holding their 5K run out of the Quinns Round Valley Trailhead starting at 8 a.m. on Saturday, so best to avoid this area until midday. The middle section of Undertow at Deer Valley is currently closed for construction. Park City Mountain still has heavy construction going on in the First Time Three Kings zone, so please respect closures on Lower Jennies and First Time Return. Our team is performing maintenance with excavators and hand crews on Crescent Mine Grade from mid-mountain all the way down to the base area, so it and Lower Loose Moose will be closed for today and reopen tomorrow. As far as conditions go, our crew has cleared mid-mountain from Marsac to King Road, and all trails below mid west of Marsac are clear and good to go. Above mid-mountain is still hit or miss with snow. Tommy, Silver Queen, and Mojave are good to go. We did a good bit of handwork on those trails this week. Charlie's 9K is still holding snow. The basin reports that mid-mountain is clear of deadfall from King Road to Redcoat at the canyons. All of Scott's Bypass and Pinecone has been cleared. Scott's and the top half mile of Pinecone are still holding a lot of snow. They may get to the Ridge Connector and Hunter's Trail by the end of the week, if not early next week. Mia with Wasatch Trails reports that everything in the Heber Valley is good to go and WOW is ripping. Joe with Park City Municipal reports that Bloods Lake is still holding snow in the last half mile or so leading up to the lake. Lupine also has snow at the top as you lose elevation. Become spotty with some muddy spots. Please remember to not cut switchbacks and disturb restoration areas up in Bonanza. The Bonanza Loop Trail seasonal closure is in effect until July 1st, and a reminder that paid parking is in effect from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Lastly, Saturday is National Trails Day, a great opportunity to give back to your local trails and those who maintain them. We will be holding our dig day from 8 to 12:30 with two projects, a hiking trail hand-built out of the Ontario Mine Trailhead and Round Valley Maintenance on the Elks Trails meeting at the NAC parking lot. For more information and to pre-register, go to mountaintrails.org. The Basin will be holding their dig day from 8 to 12 at the RTS parking lot. You can pre-register online at the Basin website. And Wasatch Trails will hold their Trailgate National Trails Day celebration with Evo Salt Lake on Saturday as well, with food, beer, shuttles, trail work, and an amazing raffle. They'll be meeting at Wasatch State Park. Have a great one out there, and we hope to see you at National Trails Day.
Okay. Hey, Rick, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Just a minute, we'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Later on, we'll be talking with Park City School District Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman, along with Joel Zero from the Community Foundation, and the two grand prize winners in the We All Belong campaign. The Executive Director of Holy Cross Ministries, Emmy Gardner, will be joined by the Director of Development and Communications, Andy Sear. The 150th anniversary of the Sisters of the Holy Cross making it to Utah. And finally, the Executive Director of Park City Film, Katie Wang, with a preview of some upcoming screenings. In the studio now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, Councilmember Roger Armstrong, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the housing policy discussion. The council had a discussion about how to meet the goal of 1,500 affordable units in 10 years, 150 units per year, basically. It seems like you can achieve that on the Klein-Dolly parcel this year, but what other suitable sites is the county got in mind?
Well, I don't know. Well, Gilmore is another large piece of property that we still own that we haven't fully programmed yet. So that would be a possibility. I think part of this strategic plan is for staff to start doing a survey of the county to try and determine where we own land, where that land is located, and what uses might be appropriate on that land. We don't just want to find a piece of vacant land and just start putting housing there. We would like to locate it near services, near transit facilities, places it makes sense, and not so we complicate other issues that we already have in the community. So that would be part of this.
Yeah, so do you favor all affordable developments, like some of the ones being proposed for Klein-Dolly, or a mix of market rate units?
Well, I don't think we're challenged right now with market rate. I think we have plenty of market rate. And, you know, some of the information that Jeff Jones presented to us yesterday, our housing director, had to do with declines in the population. We had a pretty modest decline in our population, 23 to 24, about 0.5%, a little less than 0.5%, about 180 families moved out or people moved out. So I think that market rate is not where we want to focus. We're trying to get affordable housing. We're trying to address a specific need. And I've said again and again and again, affordable housing is a need, and that need competes with, I think, the overarching goal that every one of the voters in Summit County that I've talked to is primarily concerned about, and that's growth. And all of the impacts that come from growth, which is traffic and, you know, just pressures on things we regard as amenities in the community that we like. So we have to balance that. And we did that by establishing this 1,500 number. And that was my question to Jeff yesterday. Typically, finding ways to just build affordable housing has been challenging. And most developers want some element of market rate housing, usually more than the affordable housing that they're willing to build. They want to build the market rate, and then they'll include some 10-20% of affordable in that. We've got to be very careful about how that plays out. Otherwise, this 1,500, you know, becomes 6,000 units, and that becomes 18,000 people. And that's a tough pill, I think, to ask our community to swallow.
Yeah, and in terms of the housing, I mean, how much should be for rent versus for sale?
Well, the plan, I think the proposal, and again, this was a starting point for discussion, but I think the proposal was 600 for purchase, 900 for rent. And I'd like to, I think we that deserves some discussion, particularly as it relates to deed restrictions, because we can sell properties, you wind up putting restrictions on the amount of appreciation if you really want to keep them affordable so that they stay in that affordable kind of context. And that has some limitations on the buyer's ability to build equity and to move on to, you know, another property later.
Yeah. And then once sold, I mean, I think what we're having problems with is that they become barriers to affordability, like homeowner association fees. Can the county regulate those?
I think we would have to cap them. And I think in the report I saw, I don't know whether it was an allocation or an intention or just a placeholder, but about $300 for homeowner association fees. But I think part of the way we look at that is what is the overall cost to the person occupying that unit when you factor in the purchase price, payments for a mortgage, insurance, everything that goes into that, including HOA fees. HOA fees are one of those hidden things that can take an affordable unit and make it completely unsustainable for affordability. So we do have to regulate that.
Okay, moving on. You heard from representatives from the Environmental Protection Agency speaking about the Richardson Flat mining waste cleanup. This has been in the works for decades. I don't need the whole history, but there's still a lot more to do.
Yeah, there is significant mine tailings in the 40 corridor, what we call it, from Richardson Flat all the way up to the entrance to Tollgate Canyon on 80. So all the way down, there's mine waste. We've been trying to figure out a way to get that cleaned up. Part of our purchase of the Gilmore property was to provide some reasonable economic means of taking some of that waste from its exposed status and burying it on the property in some of the uplands where it would be safe, it would be capped and stored there so it doesn't have to be trucked either to Richardson Flat or to Twin Harbors. And the original, I think, cost that they allocated to that was about $50 million, and that was probably 10, 12 years ago. When we made the deal with Gilmore, I think the new estimate was approximately $30 million, that it could save as much as $20 million with that process. They only have $18 million to actually do that cleanup work. And that's because they're under the current structure, the EPA regulation, they can only use money that they've collected from people that caused the harm to the land, people that stored the waste there. And that was United Park City Mines and a company called ASARCO. They got about $12 million, as I recall, $11 or $12 million from ASARCO, and they got a settlement recently from United Park City Mines. That adds up to about $18 million. That's all they can spend. Under current regulations, the EPA cannot use any other government money to clean up that land. The only way to be able to do that would be to declare it as formally a Superfund site, list it on the national priorities list, and then that would trigger federal funding. It would require a request to do so from the governor of Utah, and every time that's come up in Park City, people have said, thank you, no, we don't want to be known as a formally listed Superfund site. So that nominal designation has kept it from being listed. I think the fear is it can affect tourism, it can affect property values if you've got that label stuck on a community.
Oh, on the EPA website, it lists it as a Superfund site, colon, Richardson Flat. So,
well,
is it or isn't it?
That destroys that argument then, but it's not listed right now.
And any idea how that ended up that way? I mean, we've heard maybe somebody stuck a line into the bill preventing this from getting that Superfund designation.
I think, yeah, back when the Superfund was formally adopted, one of our legislators in Congress added a line in the bill saying that the Silver Creek site would not be included as a Superfund site.
And we have that operating unit one. Does the county still have access into that site, or is it going to be much more expensive to have to haul it out to Willa?
That I don't. We didn't discuss that yesterday. I don't know what the plan is. Mm-hmm. We've been waiting. The holdup back when we were negotiating to get Gilmore out of the entire designation. We were told that Richardson Flat was full. That was part of the reason for what we were trying to work on there. We were waiting for United Park City Mines to come up with what's called an ECA, which is the Engineering Evaluation and Cost Analysis for the cleanup. They never got it across the line. They submitted something. The EPA didn't like it. They negotiated for a number of years, and finally the EPA sued, and they settled, and that's the money they got. The EPA is now prepared to come up with an ECA. They tell us that they'll have it in the next 4 to 6 weeks, we think, and we'll have some idea then of what their plan is to clean it up. And one of my critical questions, and the same issue arose as it relates to Bonanza Park, how are you going to mitigate any potential harms to the community when you're digging that stuff out and hauling it? We don't want that dust floating through the air. We don't want the community to be exposed. They said they have a mitigation plan, and that should be in the ECA and in the information that we have. And then there will be public hearings about it.
All right, so we could see some work being done this year or not?
I don't know if they'll start the work this year, but they should at least adopt the plan, and then we'll see what their timeline is according to that plan.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the discussion on federal cuts and how that impacts Summit County Lands and the health department. You heard from both Phil Bondurant from the health department and Jess Kirby from County Lands. Let's start with County Lands. Jess Kirby said that wildfire response is being threatened by these cuts. So how much personnel does the Heber Camas Ranger District have?
I don't know what the total number of rangers that they have, but obviously there have been cuts to the Forest Service. Both in terms of funding and in terms of bodies. Those Forest Service workers and recreational workers often switch to an admin role in the event of a wildfire. So somebody has to come in and coordinate everything that goes into fighting a major wildfire. If those human beings are no longer in their positions, then we don't have access to that. So we need to figure out a way to supplement as we head into wildfire season to make sure that we've got the ability to have that administrative function covered. We asked the county manager yesterday to meet with the emergency management department for the county and just make sure that under these new circumstances, we are totally covered. Air resources are another place that we have concerns. When we had both the Rockport fire and then the fire off the freeway, Summit Park fire, those air resources came in hard and they came in fast and they knocked it down quickly. If we don't have those air resources, then, you know, something like happened in the Palisades is a possibility. Then we're relying on reduced resources to knock down those fires. So I want to make sure that from an emergency planning standpoint, not just within the county, but how the county interacts with the state and the federal authorities, we have a good plan and we understand exactly where we are going into the season.
And then what about the property acquisitions, the Your Ranch and the 910 Ranch? Are there currently any concerns with those federal grants?
You know, I think there are always concerns. We're told we have the money that was allocated for both locked up. I don't think that money, I'm not going to say it out loud. I think we have the money in hand and would hope that we will be able to retain that money. I think for both the health department and the public lands department, those are two departments that rely heavily on federal grants. We rely on those grants for wildfire mitigation. We've had great support from our congressional representatives in getting those funds in place. We're going to go back and make sure that they know that the threat has not gone down in terms of wildfire and water resources, and we need to make sure that those grants stay alive. So stay tuned on that.
All right, and then on the health side, Phil Bondurant estimating the impact of federal cuts, saying it could be up to $2 million in losses by this time next year.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like I said, those two departments rely heavily on federal grants, and they're generally plentiful. So it's not just the loss of $2 million that we should be concerned about. It's the loss of those services. I mean, we provide services to women, infants, and children. We provide vaccination services through the health department. Behavioral health is critically imperiled by a lot of these cuts. Medicaid is going to have a huge impact, potentially, depending on what happens to this bill. So that's obviously something that's very dynamic right now. We'll have to see how it comes out. And again, the instruction, I think, to the county manager is take a look at our overall budget. The fundamental duties of all governments, I believe, whether you're local, city, county, or the congressional level, is health, safety, and welfare. And the health department and these fire issues are two areas where it's clear to see what the health and safety issues are. So if we have to start cutting the budget because we start losing funding, we need to figure out the like-to-haves versus the critical needs in those kinds of areas.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, ma'am. Thank you for
having me. All right. Thank you, Raj.
Talk to you soon.
Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong, you're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, on Tuesday, the Park City School District announced the grand prize winners for the We All Belong campaign. Two staff members and two students were honored. The prize money was put up by the Park City Community Foundation. In the studio with details, I have the superintendent of Park City Schools, Lindsay Huntsman, along with the student winners, Shepard Williams, a fourth grader, and Easton Jones, a ninth grader, I guess for one more day, huh? This last day of school?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay. Well, Lindsay, let's start with you, and maybe you can start by telling us what the We All Belong campaign is and what you were hoping to do with it.
Yeah, we really wanted to infuse kindness throughout our schools. And really, this was a response to some of the OCR incidents and helping our kids understand there's no place for hate within our schools or even beyond our schools, and having students model for one another what kindness means and reward kind behavior.
Okay, so how did it work?
Yeah, so teachers and principals across the school district could recommend students just observing kind behavior, a student being social to another student that maybe is not having friends or being able to make friends at lunch or sitting with them at lunch. And so they can nominate students throughout the school year.
Okay. And the Park City Community Foundation put up money. How much?
I believe it's $18,500 to reward not only our district winners, but also our site winners. So there was a staff and a student site winner as well.
At each school?
Yes.
Okay. And then grand prize winners out of those?
Is correct. Okay. And initially it was going to be one staff member and one student member for the district. But as we came together and deliberated, it was clear that we needed to award more than one student and one staff member.
Okay, so was it a one year thing or?
No, we plan to continue and expand it because people may say, hey, why are you awarding so much money to these kids for being kind? Well, it's far more expensive to address discipline matters when you think about time, resources that you have to dedicate to address those behaviors.
Okay, and how many submissions did you get for nominations?
A ton. I don't know the exact number, but a lot.
And then how did you decide who won?
Yeah, so the administrative teams at the sites put forth the names, and we had a committee that read through, and we really wanted to select individuals who modeled kind behavior, inclusion, empathy, those things we want everyone to adopt and practice.
Okay, so Easton, again, Easton Jones, ninth grade. Do you know who nominated you?
I think it was Ben Mueller. I don't know, Principal Mueller, but that's all I've heard.
And tell me, so give me some examples. I mean, what did Mr. Mueller note about you? What were you doing?
I don't really know. I think it's just, I'm just trying to like be kind to everyone. Like if you go into the day like with kindness, like just any interaction you have, it just brightens everyone else's days. So I think probably that, I don't know.
Yeah, and anything in particular that you remember doing? I mean, just walking up to somebody maybe who was sitting by themselves or?
I broke up a fight one time this year. It was two kids just started like fighting out of nowhere. I got up, went and broke it up and like made sure the guys stayed apart. I don't know, like maybe that.
Okay, and then you won what? For as the grand prize winner?
I won like $500 and the kindness award.
Okay, so I mean, is that cash or is that?
I think it is cash, yes.
Yeah, so what are you gonna do with it?
I think I'm gonna like go to a concert. I don't know, I've been looking at a bunch of concert tickets. Sounds like a really fun idea, so yeah.
Well, good for you. Shepard, tell us a little bit about what it is that, do you know who nominated you?
Yes, my teacher.
Okay, and your teacher's who?
Miss Seifert.
Okay, and did she tell you what you did that was exemplary?
Yeah, I mean, she told me there's this one Hispanic kid that always just sits by himself. He really likes soccer and I always just try to play with him.
Yeah, so you go out and play soccer with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. Are you guys still friends?
I mean, yeah, we are.
Yeah, so you also won some money as well?
Yeah.
I mean, what does a fourth grader do with $500? That's a lot of money.
I'm going to try to get a new bike.
Okay, like a mountain bike? What are you looking at?
Yeah, a mountain bike.
Yeah, nice. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lindsay, tell us, who kind of came up with this idea?
Yeah, so there's an organization that promotes the We All Belong campaign, and so collectively we decided this was a great way to help our kids understand what it means to be kind, show them kind behaviors in response to previous incidences and the perception that bullying is not being addressed. In a world where there is much division, we wanted to help our kids understand it's better for us to come together, have honest conversations, and be kind. And you can do that in a meaningful and respectful way.
All right. As you mentioned, two staff members also honored. Can you tell us?
Yeah. So Mr. Bob Edmondson, he's the associate principal at Park City High School. He won one of the staff member awards, and he will be retiring at the end of this school year. And he exemplifies kindness. One incident in particularly, someone had spilled a lunch, and he was on his hands and knees picking up the lunch, cleaning the carpet, cleaning the windows, still interacting with kids as he was doing that. And he didn't have to do that. As a leader of the building, he could have easily called a custodian, but he chose to take his time to clean up that spilled lunch. So it's Bob Emerson at the high school, and then Quetzal Morales. She's at Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. She's the outreach coordinator. She happens to be a Park City High School alumni. So it was an honor for me to award her, because she is a former student of mine, but very inclusive at Jeremy Ranch. She's the heart and soul of that school. Kids often will use their dojo points to have lunch with her. And she just exemplifies what we intend this award to be.
All right, so dojo points or what?
So, Shepherd, do you wanna talk about dojo points?
Yeah, they're just like an award you get for like doing something like nice or like having good behavior.
All right, so is that how you won? You had a bunch of dojo points and the most, and that's...
No.
It is something to reward positive behavior within our elementary schools, and then kids can choose how they want to spend their dojo points.
Great. All right, anything else you guys want to tell us about your awards? Congratulations, good work. Hopefully it's an example to other kids when they see your new bike. You invite him to the concert. Can you give us an update? Just given all of the federal administration cuts, we had kind of heard that maybe these complaints with the Office of Civil Rights just may not be investigated because they don't have the staff to do it. Have you heard anything?
Regardless of what's happening at the federal level, we will continue to address the incidences as well as any behavior that is not deemed appropriate in our schools, because we want our kids to show up and feel included, safe, so that they can learn. So despite what might be happening outside of Park City, that doesn't change our behavior.
All right, and I know that training was going on with staff. Does that continue?
It will continue, and we will continue to enhance that training, as well as onboard any new staff that may be coming to us in August.
All right, how many new staff do you need to hire?
To be determined. You know, there's always the wild card that happens over the summer. Someone chooses to leave or has an opportunity elsewhere. So undetermined number, but we feel good about where we're at right now and looking forward to a fresh start in August.
Okay. Last day of school?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow's the last
yes.
day. Okay. And then, of course, high school graduation. Looks like the weather's going to be fabulous for that.
Yeah, we're excited. I'm headed over to practice when I leave from here. Dozier Field, 5 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Gates open at 4 p.m. to our families.
Okay. All right. Guys, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Superintendent of Schools, Lindsay Huntsman, along with the grand prize winners from the We All Belong campaign, Shepherd Williams and Easton Jones. Tomorrow marks 150 years that the Sisters of Holy Cross first arrived in Utah. I'm in the studio to talk more about that history. I have the executive director of Holy Cross Ministries, Emmy Gardner, and I think we're going to get Andy Searin here if he can get through the traffic okay. Good morning, Emmy.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so let's start with just what brought the sisters to Utah in the first place.
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing story. So the sisters were asked to come out here by the then Bishop Scanlon because he knew of their work as the nurses during the Civil War and wanted them to come out and build a miners hospital, right? We had tons of miners here, immigrant workforce, primarily kind of Irish. And so he just said, can you come out here and help us? And the amazing thing was within 6 months, they had a hospital built, they had a school built. And all of this by doing their own fundraising. And, you know, I mean, I think it's what sort of coined what Brigham Young said about them, that they were just like incredibly industrious, compassionate women who wanted to make a difference in the community.
Yeah. How many came?
Initially, only two, amazingly. Sister Augusta, or Mother Augusta, as they call her, and Sister Raymond. And then shortly after, more came, and they came out, like, you know, in horse and buggy. Train and then horse and buggy. It was amazing, yeah.
Yeah. So the hospital and the school they built are in Salt Lake or here?
Well, there's the Miners Hospital here, and that was originally the sisters that they built. And then they later built a large hospital that will, the one on South Temple, will be celebrating its 100th year anniversary in October, right? So, and then they also built another hospital out at Jordan Valley later before they kind of closed the hospitals in the 90s.
Okay, and who were they trying to help, the miners?
Well, primarily for the sisters in general, it was anybody that was in need, right? And the underserved, and like, I just love the story you had before about the Be Kind initiative, and those kids were amazing, and that was so much, I think, the sisters' story, which was about compassionate service, right? And really meeting the needs and really believing in people that if you empowered them, that they really could thrive, right? So the vast majority of the folks that they honestly were serving were immigrants, women, families living in poverty, and again, just trying to help them, uplift them, and have a better life, right?
All right. So at some point, the Sisters of the Holy Cross kind of became what we have today, the Holy Cross Ministries.
Yeah. So that story, fast forward to so they come out in 1875, fast forward to 1990s-ish, as the health systems are getting big and integrated, Intermountain, University, the sisters determine, you know, we can't compete with these big health systems, so they choose to sell the hospitals. But the money from the sale of those hospitals, they said, you know, this is Utah money, and we're invested in Utah, and how can we pivot and how can we respond? So they did this amazing listening tour, and really resonated with the immigrant population back then. And so they founded Holy Cross Ministries as a social service agency, a 501c3, to truly provide support and services primarily to that immigrant population in the 90s, right? And so we do in our three main pillars, health, education, and justice, and again, supporting folks. I mean, the reality is, you know, 9 out of 10 of our clients are immigrant clients. 75% of them are uninsured. You know, when I think of Park City, I think about how we really are helping to empower the workforce here that supports tourism, construction, the service industry. You know, and again, without, I think, that support service, you know, we provide so many of our services either free because we get grants and other contributions and donations, or, you know, we actually are providing those services at like a sliding fee scale. So again, wanting to uplift and empower the community as much as possible.
And I know you do a lot of work here in the Park City area, but is the work being done statewide or just in the Salt Lake?
Yeah, definitely, definitely statewide. Thank you, COVID. I mean, we have a main office down in Salt Lake, but we are as far north as Logan. And via statewide assistance, we actually can go down as far as Moab and St. George, primarily based, though, in, I would say, the Wasatch Front kind of I-15 corridor, right? And then a lot up here in both Summit and Wasatch County.
Yeah, and what kind of numbers do you have? I mean, in terms of the numbers of people that you actually assist, any idea?
Yeah, I mean, we were over 4,000 clients last year and anticipating that that will be even more this year. Just given the changes federally, I think our concern is that folks are really needing knowledge and information. And I mean to say in a rapid fire capacity, because, you know, an executive order comes out and what does that mean and how can that happen and what's going on? So we've had just, you know, the phone ringing off the hook just with people trying to understand what are my options, what are my opportunities, right? Based on who now can be here versus who can't. And yeah.
So you're spending more of the money than rather than the health and education on the justice part of things at this point?
Actually, in all, because there's a huge fear. I was just in a meeting last week with Congressman Moore trying to talk about, you know, please don't do these Medicaid cuts, what it will do to devastate, you know, our community, and especially the CHIP for All Kids, which was allowing families that were mixed status to have insurance coverage for their, you know, undocumented children, too. So it's just... It's across all, and what we're seeing is an uptick. We currently have a wait list of 136 clients wanting mental health services for bilingual bicultural service, right? And so it's across the board in all three of our pillars, Leslie.
Okay, let's see, you've got an upcoming event this month, Sisters Silver and Service. Andy, tell us about this.
Yeah. It's an invite-only event, but anyone who wants to reach out to us will send you an invite, because it's just a way to celebrate the history of the sisters, particularly in Park City, and also with some of our Irish immigrants. In fact, we're going to have Michael Bryan, who writes for the Salt Lake Tribune, is also an attorney, and he's on our board. But he really knows the history of the sisters, and he's going to be speaking. And then we'll also have Roger McDonough, and Roger is actually the great-grandson of Bartley McDonough. Bartley McDonough was on the original board of the Miners Hospital, and he was very active in the mining community up here in the unions and in among the working folks here in Park City way back, so in the 1880s. So,
I didn't realize that history. We used to work together. Roger, of course, was at KCPW,
but yes.
Stations were owned by Community Wireless at the time.
And one of Bartley's kids became a Holy Cross sister. Surprise!
Yeah, Sister Marie Camille was, Bartley's daughter.
All right. If people are interested, how do they reach you then?
They can either go to our website, but the best way is just to reach out to me on my email. It's acier@hcmutah.org.
Okay, and again, that's happening Friday, June 20th, 5 p.m. at Miners Hospital.
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Okay, also, you're asking people to save the date for the annual fall fundraiser.
Yes, that will be October 4th. And we always have, every year we have our big fundraiser, we call it the Autumn Harvest Benefit. But this year, because of the 150th anniversary and we're celebrating the sisters, we're calling it Fiesta 150. And so we're going to have a real, you know, Latin-influenced event with some great food from Monarca, which is a really nice restaurant in Salt Lake City that has a Mexican cuisine with a French touch.
Okay, and that's happening Saturday, October 4th at the University of Utah?
Yes, at the Alumni House, the Cleon Peterson Eccles Alumni House on the campus. We've been there, we try to go there about every other year, just so our supporters in Salt Lake and our supporters here can get there. But we always have a party bus from Park City so that people don't have to drive up and down the canyon. They can enjoy, in fact, they can maybe have a beverage on the way down and not have to worry about the traffic and finding a parking spot.
Great. Okay. And still looking for sponsors for that event, huh?
Yes, absolutely. We've got some wonderful sponsors who've stepped up already. Our premier sponsor is Common Spirit. Common Spirit is the hospital group, a nonprofit hospital group that bought Holy Cross Hospital and four other hospitals. They've actually renamed them Holy Cross in honor of the sisters, but it's a completely separate group. But they've been a supporter of ours and really good friends over the last few years.
Yeah. So is there still that connection then between the Holy Cross Ministries and the healthcare?
Well, so yes and no. Common Spirit came in. They are the largest nonprofit health system in the country, right? They bought the five hospitals. Stewart Health had previously owned the five hospitals here in Utah. They were the largest for-profit health system. So a connection, I guess, in terms of Catholic healthcare, yes, at a macro level, but knowing the Holy Cross Sisters, no, or being a part of that, that never was the case. But again, as Andy said, really wanting to honor the incredible legacy of 150 years of healthcare, they just named all five of the hospitals Holy Cross. And the sisters are super humble because they said, we don't understand why they named them five of them after us. We only had two. And again, it was just to acknowledge that amazing legacy of their service here in the state.
Yeah. How many sisters are left in Utah?
Currently in Utah, we have three that are here that are still working, two in education and one in mental health. And most of the other sisters have now moved back to the retirement home, which is in South Bend, Indiana.
Right.
So yeah. And but we do see via Zoom, we have four sisters on our board. And so we do maintain that connection with the sisters because they still have what we would call members' rights in terms of some of the work that we do as a nonprofit. So
there is something that still exists, though, Sisters of the Holy Cross?
Yep. Sisters of the Holy Cross, teaching out at John the Baptist, teaching at St. Anne's, which used to be the orphanage. And then one of our sisters is a social worker who is working providing bilingual therapy at Latino Behavioral Health.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Well, just, again, anybody who would like to sponsor the Fiesta 150, just reach out to us. You can reach out to us on our website, hcmutah.org. Love to talk to you. And just, remember the sisters this year. It's a big deal, and especially tomorrow, the exact 150th anniversary. Just we'll be thinking about them, and we'll be telling some good stories about the great sisters and what the work they did here in Park City.
Emmy?
That's what I would just say. It's been a wonderful year to just kind of think about their amazing charism and service. And like I said, I think just hearing those kids before, I was just thinking it was great to have our story after that, because the sisters so much believed in investing in kids and as the future and empowering. And so, and their Be Kind campaign just reminds me our philosophy and attitude is we just need to be good humans to all humanity. That's so much of what the sisters were about.
Okay. Emmy Gardner, Andy Sear, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
On the phone now with an update from Park City Film, Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we've got tonight's special screening, if not sold out, nearly sold out.
It is completely sold out, but we, of course, always have a wait list. People always sign up and don't show up. So that is par for the course here in Park City. So we expect to be able to release some tickets to the wait list. But yeah, we're wrapping up the end of our season with some special screenings like the one tonight. And then we've got a final weekend and kind of week of showings. So lots going on. But tonight we're partnering with Utah Film Commission to host a free screening of the new HBO film Mountain Head by director Jesse Armstrong. And this is a dark comedy about four tech billionaires who reunite for a bro weekend in the mountains, aka Deercrest, while an international crisis dominates the news. The movie was shot in Park City this winter, and after the film, we'll be joined by production supervisor Brooke Redman and Utah Film Commission production manager Derek Mellis for a discussion about the making of the film. Tickets, as I mentioned, are currently sold out, but starting about 15 minutes to showtime, we'll start releasing unclaimed tickets to the waitlist. So if you have a ticket, please plan to arrive early. Parking will be tight, but there's free parking across the street at City Park, as locals know. Of course, you can always take the free public bus. And then once we kind of sort everything out, we'll get everyone in the theater. Showtime is at 7:00. And then this weekend, our final feature film for the season is Jane Austen Wrecked My Life. This film premiered at Toronto, and it's a dramedy about an aspiring writer who takes up a writing residency and finds herself caught in a romantic triangle straight out of a Jane Austen novel. And that'll be showing Friday and Saturday at 7, and then again Sunday at 6. And then next week, we have a series of celebratory films. I'm excited about these. They're all free. Starting on Wednesday, we're going to celebrate Latino Arts Festival with the Sundance Film Festival 2024 favorite, Gaucho Gaucho. And this is about the iconic South American cowboys and cowgirls who live beyond the boundaries of the modern world. Beautiful, beautiful film. Thursday, we're celebrating Pride Month with Jenny Livingston's iconic Paris is Burning. This is a film about New York's African American and Latinx Harlem drag ball scene in the 1980s. The film won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance in 1991 and is being presented in partnership with Summit Pride and Mountain Mediation. We'll have small group community conversations after the film. And then this is one of my personal favorite films, so please come out and see this on the big screen. And then finally, Friday the 13th, an auspicious day, we have the Made in Utah Film Showcase. And this is a relaunch of the Filmmaker Showcase, which was created by local Jill Orschel in 2005. And we'll be showing 10 short films by Utah filmmakers and hosting a filmmakers lounge after the screening to create a space for filmmakers, film industry professionals, and film lovers to mingle and celebrate. So lots going on there. And then we kind of switch into our outdoor mode. We've got a selection of outdoor films planned this summer once again on LED screens, so they will start before dark. The first one is in Hoytsville on June 26th, which is a Thursday. We'll be showing Pete's Dragon, which is about a mysterious dragon living in the woods in the Pacific Northwest. It stars our very own Robert Redford. We're partnering with North Summit Unite, who will be providing free food trucks for that film presentation. Showtime is at 7, as I mentioned. We're on a LED screen, so we can start before dark, and admission is free.
Okay. Keep going, because you've got others in July and August, huh?
Yes, yep. So we'll be going throughout the summer in kind of a mix of different places. In July, we're partnering with the Park City Library for Paddington, Peru on July 11th. That'll be on an inflatable screen, so that one's going to start at dusk. And then in Colville, we have The Day the Earth Blew Up, a Looney Tunes movie, which I'm super excited about. A relaunch of Looney Tunes. It was kind of on the shelf for a little while, and then a different distributor picked it up and relaunched it. So if you're a fan favorite of that, certainly from my childhood, of Bugs Bunny and all those folks, definitely come out to Colville on July 26th. We'll be out by the rodeo grounds there, and that'll be on an LED screen, so a 7 o'clock screening, and free food trucks. We're partnering with Summit Health on that. But yeah, you can go to parkcityfilm.org. We've got some more films coming up in August that'll have directors and Q&As and kind of different levels of engagement. But summer season for us is a little bit of a mix of film genres, a little more, you know, outdoor settings, indoor settings, little indie films, some more kind of family friendly. But it's just a fun way for us to play with our scheduling and engage different areas of our community through film.
Yeah. So do you think you'll be adding more outdoor screenings or...
Probably we'll be adding more outdoor screenings probably for the fall. We're looking at maybe doing a return of the drive-in for some of our ski films over in Deer Valley is what we've been talking about. So we'll see if that we can get that to come together. But also looking kind of more expansively at our programming, adding some more Thursday night films, certainly bringing in more kind of special screenings with directors, Q&As, kind of post-film conversations. That's certainly where we're seeing people really responding well to those. It's just a unique aspect of what Park City Film brings to our community. And so trying to lean in more into that as we anticipate the departure of Sundance, really amplifying people's connection to independent cinema is really going to be important for us and certainly for the community is what we're hearing. I've had many, many conversations, as you can imagine, about what's next. What's Park City Film going to do? Hopefully you're not going anywhere. No, we're not going anywhere. You know, it's actually the opposite. We'll be doing more of what we've been doing in the past and certainly looking at new partnerships and looking to next summer, again, amplifying that screening, those screenings and, you know, figuring out different locations and kind of different methods of engaging people in film.
All right. And tell me, this Mountain Head screening, how did Park City Film get to show this?
The Utah Film Commission has always been a fantastic partner for us. When Yellowstone was being shot here, we showed the premieres for season 1 and season 2 at the Santee. And Virginia Pierce is a good friend. And, you know, she reached out and said, hey, you know, Mountain Head, which was shot in a remarkable 6-month time frame from like starting pen to paper to final production release, which is unheard of in the film industry. And she said, HBO would love to thank the community and the Film Commission would love to do it in Park City. Because, of course, it was shot here. They could have gone to Salt Lake. But they said, no, we need to do it in the community and, you know, get everyone together and rally around it. And so we're thrilled to be partnering with them and to be able to present it here to our community. I mean, there's nothing like seeing these, you know, just seeing your hometown on the big screen. I mean, you're watching it and you're like, I know exactly where that is. You know, some of the reviews are like, oh, this is in the Alps somewhere. And I'm like, no, it's Park City. Like, I know exactly where that is. That's the Jordan Dell. And so it's always kind of fun. And then, of course, it helps our local economy. It helps the local film industry. But just a reminder, I think it's a nice reminder for people that the film industry in Utah is really robust and we are able to bring these world-class productions here through the help of the Film Commission and kind of hearing behind the scenes, like, how does that work? How do you get your house in these films? Like, you can sign up for that, as it turns out. So, it's a really fun partnership we have with them.
Okay. Katie, anything else?
Just parkcityfilm.org. Want to thank everyone for another great season. Please come see, of course, these great films we have coming up. Our mission is to create community through film, and we hope we've programmed some fun films that will reach every member in our community. So please join us.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Katie Wang is the executive director of Park City Film.